Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment to discuss the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission's final report on the Wall Street meltdown that will be made public tomorrow. William Cohan, who covers Wall Street for Fortune and the New York Times, joins us. Then we will look into the seizure of 20 gun runners and 700 guns in Arizona that were destined for the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico. Gerald Nunziato, who developed gun tracing methods for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms, joins us to explain how much law enforcement is crippled by the NRA's representatives in Congress in their efforts to stop gun trafficking. Then we'll go to Cairo, Egypt, for an update on today's demonstrations in what many see as a prelude to a revolution like the recent one in Tunisia. Samia Sarigaldan joins us. She is the author of Cairo House, an autobiography that traces recent political developments in Egypt. We have a lot to discuss, so stay tuned. I'm Ian Masters again, and I'm speaking with William Cohan, who is a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. His acclaimed book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company. He began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both for Lazard Frere and J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, he published The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazard Frere and Company. He's currently working on a book about Goldman Sachs, which I think should be coming out pretty soon, right, William?
Yes, in the first half of this year. So.
Good. Well, we'll be the first on the block to call you about that one.
Can't wait.
Let me talk about this report that's coming out tomorrow, and there have been some leaks from it, obviously. Mm. Already we know that it's a political football because the report is only the majority report from the Democrats. The Republicans are sufficiently irritated that they even have two separate dissenting reports, don't they?
Yes, that's right. Which, I mean, the dissension sort of all began at the beginning of December, which was when the original report was supposed to come out. But because of the dissension, and maybe just because it took longer to write the report than people thought, the Republicans said, hey, guess what? We don't agree with what the direction that the Democrats are going on this, so we're going to have our own report. And then there was another individual, Peter Wallison, a Republican, who dissented from the Republican dissent. So a lot of people are saying, you know, as a result, it doesn't have the authority that, say, the 9/11 report had. Ian, I'm actually in fairly strong disagreement with that. I have a feeling that it's going to be quite impactful in that I think it's going to reveal a lot of what really happened here.
Well, the minority Republican report is from somebody that's quite obsessed with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and he wants to make the government responsible for this as opposed to Wall Street.
Yes, correct.
But given the majority report, and of course the Republicans did resort to almost childish things where they wanted all references to derivatives and Wall Street cut from the report, it's though they're trying to sanitize history here. I suppose one should be gratified at least that the report finds fault with the federal chairman, Alan Greenspan, who for decades was considered a genius and clearly was completely blind to this. And he's being held culpable along with his successor, Ben Bernanke.
Yes. Since, as you pointed out at the top of the show, the report is actually being released early this tomorrow morning. All I know for sure is sort of what I read in the New York Times, which is probably a very good source on this, who had a reporter for which got a copy of the final report and is quoting from it. Bernanke was criticized, and Greenspan was criticized, and I think that probably makes a lot of sense. They were both chairman of the Federal Reserve when these first the real estate bubble was inflated under Greenspan, and then the failure, I think, to act. It's not that they, I think Bernanke probably saw what was happening but chose not to act and hoped that maybe it would just all go away. And I think they're probably deserving of criticism correctly. The other a group that I think is deserved in coming and being criticized is Wall Street itself. I think this, as the report says, this is an entirely preventable crisis, sadly. It was an entirely man-made crisis. sadly. It could have absolutely been prevented. It did not have to happen. And that, you know, frankly, is the finding that I came up with in my book, House of Cards, about Bear Stearns, which was really the canary in the coal mine of the crisis. And everything that I've researched about the crisis, everything I've read about the crisis, everything I've written about the crisis, leads me over and over and over again to that very same conclusion that the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission came up to, which is that this was a man-made, self-inflicted wound, did not have to happen. And so I applaud them for coming up with that decision and telling it like it is, because that really is, you know, what happened here. And I think any other explanation really kind of whitewashes it. So I'm proud of them.
And in terms of the president's State of the Union last night, William Cohen is an online columnist for the New York Times, former investment banker and author of House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street. We're talking about the Commission of Inquiry on Wall Street's report that comes out tomorrow. The president did not mention anything that we're talking about. Obviously, maybe he's going to let this thing find its way into the press and into the political debate. But most of what we hear about what he's proposing, what the Republicans are proposing about how to fix the economy, seems absurd. They're only talking about 12% of the economy, which is discretionary spending, which has already been cut. So I don't know how they're going to make the real savings that they are. And to the president's credit, at least he did try and put that in context. I just get the feeling that everything that's happening out there is totally theatrical and has no relevance to the real world. And it's almost as absurd as the Republican response when the congressman who responded to the president spent a couple of minutes at the opening talking about Gabrielle Giffords, their colleague that was shot, without mentioning guns. So it seems to me that there's so much of our political debate is just simply off the record. I mean, not on the record, but they can't even talk about real stuff.
Well, we do seem to be heavily in the mode of theatrics, you know, at the moment. To talk about Congressman Giffords without talking about the Second Amendment and, you know, what I think should be a repeal of the Second Amendment. I cannot imagine why people need to carry guns in this day and age. I just don't see what it accomplishes. I can see, you know, at one point maybe it made sense, when we had to hunt and gather for our food, but we don't have to do that anymore. It just seems to me that guns lead to nothing but trouble. And in terms of talking about the real issues that are affecting the economy, I mean, on the one hand, President Obama last night was, looking prospectively to the future, was sort of being, thinking out loud about how this once great country can be great again, and the things that make this country great, its entrepreneurial spirit, its can-do spirit, our ability to think big. Remember at the end of the speech he was talking about thinking big. Of that is extremely true. And he tried to, compare this moment in that we're having such difficulties in our economy to a Sputnik moment. And I think that's not a bad, obviously the metaphor is a little strained, but I do think that, we do need to face up to our problems in a major way. Now, ironically, I think his rhetoric is fabulous. But I think, what is really going on in actuality, I've just found to be, astounding in that, maybe it's the definition of genius, Ian, the ability to hold two competing thoughts in your head at the same time. I mean, on the one hand, he's talking about a Sputnik moment, how we all have to pull together to solve some of these problems. And on the other hand, this is the guy who signed the new tax bill during the lame duck session that added something like $900 billion to the deficit, which now is something like, $1.5 trillion, I think the Wall Street Journal is reporting today. That's a new, higher figure than had been reported before. And, we're not doing anything to address these budget deficits, which are going to be, extremely fiscally debilitating. We can't pretend anymore that these kinds of that other countries are going to suffer. What's happening in Ireland or the UK, where they're making big, deep budget cuts, or what happened in Greece, or what's happening in Portugal or Spain or Italy. Why are we pretending that those things are only going to happen to countries on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Our fiscal irresponsibility is going to catch up with us. And you know, for all this talk of the new Congress being put in place to deal with these fiscal problems, I don't see any, you know, I know it's the early weeks. I know, you know, basically they were out of business last week because of Congressman Giffords, but I really think I didn't hear anything particularly inspiring last night on the subject of cutting the deficit, and I don't really hear anything out of the Republican Congress about cutting the deficit, and this is extremely troubling to me because, you know, we don't have anywhere else to go on monetary policy. Our fiscal house is not in order. In no time, in my view, we're going to be caught with the same kind of, you know, infection that is over in Europe is going to infect us. There's just no other way to do it. We are as we saw in this financial crisis in 2007 and 2008, we are in an incredibly interwoven world. I mean, everything is interconnected now. And to think that what's going on over there is not going to affect us is just foolishness.
Again, William Cohen, I was struck by how the President's State of the Union felt like a kind of pep rally for corporate America. And I'm wondering whether you think the President's plan to link corporate tax breaks with overhauling the entire tax structure for corporations and getting rid of all the loopholes and leveling the playing field.
Well, Ian, there's no question that ever since the Dodd-Frank bill was signed last summer, I mean, first of all, you know, in the year leading up to the signing of the Dodd-Frank financial re-regulation law, Wall Street and businessmen were demonized. That seemed to be very politically expedient. I think the Obama administration went way too far in that regard. Now I think they're going way too far in the other direction. You know, last night, you know, you talked about our entrepreneurial spirit and all the great can-do things we can do. In this country, you know, if only business would get back on track and all the tax breaks for business and the appointment of Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE, as a special advisor to Obama to get back, you know, to try to create more jobs. I mean, all of a sudden he went from demonizing Wall Street and businessmen to being their best friend. And the pendulum swings are too much because it implies extremes of behavior, and that's not the way life really works. You know, in the real world, two things can happen at the same time. On the same night that he gave the State of the Union address last night, we had the beginning of the leaks from the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, which clearly blamed Wall Street for this, as we were discussing at the top of the show. And for him not even to mention this report last night is mind-boggling. I mean, how can we just go forward and pretend that the role that Wall Street bankers, traders, and executives, among others, had in this financial crisis never even exist? It never even existed. I mean, it's almost like psychotic behavior. I mean, sure. I think we need to really focus on improving things together by admitting what's gone wrong in the past.
Well, that's what I meant, I think, earlier, William Cohen, about the kind of the black holes in our political debate where we just simply don't talk about the serious connections between policy and reality, whether it's guns or Wall Street. But you had a very interesting piece in the New York Times a few days ago, What's Good for GM is Good for Homeowners. I was very disappointed and still am about the way that this rash of foreclosures have been mishandled and the government band-aids aren't working and there's an awful lot of foreclosures in the pipeline. Apparently this year is going to be as bad as ever, if not worse. You know, he could have made something out of the fact that for all of the absurd talk about socialism, General Motors was rescued by a socialist government and is now humming along and the biggest car supplier in China. Why not borrow from that model, as you've argued in your New York Times piece?
Well, it's truly disgraceful how big corporations are able to use the bankruptcy court to restructure their debts. I mean, that's what it's there for, and that's what they, you know, and that's what they rightly do, and that's how GM and Chrysler were allowed to shed billions of dollars in debt and other liabilities and reemerge as, you know, new companies that we all applaud and are all getting so excited about and patting each other on the back about. But yet, homeowners aren't entitled to that same privilege. It seems to me that, you know, if their choices are either to make their mortgage payments on time, as if, you know, they had plenty of cash, as if they, you know, had taken out the right amount of mortgage, as if they hadn't borrowed too much debt, their choices are either to make those payments on time or face foreclosure, by and large. Why is it that, you know, corporations who have billions and billions of debt they can't pay back, that they should never have borrowed in the first place, they're allowed to flush, you know, their debts that they can't pay in bankruptcy court, but homeowners aren't allowed to do that. Their choices are foreclosure or paying, you know, the mortgage on time every month. And it seems to me that the banks could very easily go through the procedures. Yes, it would be time-consuming, but no more time-consuming than it is for them to grapple with the GM bankruptcy or any other big bankruptcy that they have to come to grips with, that they lent money that they're never going to get back. They should look at the circumstances that every homeowner has. They should carefully evaluate the value of the house, the amount of the loan, the amount of the cash flows that individuals have and can make payments, and restructure, remodify these loans, as it's called, modify these mortgages, allow people to take more time to make mortgage payments at different rates, perhaps lower rates of interest, reduce the mortgage amount, turn a non-productive mortgage asset that's sitting on a bank's book into a productive mortgage asset that's sitting on a bank's books where the mortgage holder pays off the mortgage over a longer period of time at different interest rates and can still stay in his home. Seems to me that would do so much to make people feel better about their financial situation, about their homes, make banks feel better about all these mortgages that they have that are now pushing into foreclosure. And it would help the whole economy by not making the home ownership a sinkhole. It would begin to restore home ownership as being part of the American dream. Why banks don't do that, I have no idea. It just seems absolutely outrageous to me that corporations can do it and everybody applauds, but homeowners can't do it.
Just in the last couple of seconds, William Cohan, we know that the rest of the world, the Saudis and the sovereign funds, are now steering away from Wall Street because of what happened. They're not going to put their money in the hand of these kind of casino gamblers anymore. And the fact that nobody's serious, even if the president intends to be, the Congress aren't serious about fixing the economy. Is this a signal to the world that the U.S. can't get its act together?
Well, you know, Ian, I think it should be. I mean, and why the rating agencies are so busy downgrading the debt of European countries on the periphery of Central Europe, why they're not, you know, using that same hard microscope on the U.S. fiscal situation is mind-boggling to me. I mean, just because you know, the Chinese and the Japanese and the Koreans have been willing to buy so much of our debt and finance our deficits doesn't mean that they're going to do that forever. And if they are, it's going to cost us more and more in interest payments. Interest payments, you know, continue to eat up more and more of our budgets every year. And I mean, I just think that there's no question that the time has come for us to get our fiscal house in order, much like the Clinton administration did in 93 and 94. The time has come.
I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, William Cohan.
Thank you.
Again, William Cohan is a New York Times online columnist and a former investment banker and author of House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the gun runners who were caught down in Arizona with hundreds of assault rifles on their way to the Mexican cartels.